Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Off The Ball, GAA.
They were so wrapped in the game, they forgot to do their job. They switched off, and we needed them to do their job, like, you know? There's 15,000 of them behind me. Like, you know, do your job.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Got a full house for you. Colin, good morning to you.
How are you, Dirk?
How was the pain today? Gone? Over?
Yeah, I think it lessens as the days progress.
Well, time heals all, doesn't it?
But every so often you're reminded.
Not really.
No.
In your experience?
No, it gets worse. Especially as it gets, as an All-Ireland win for Kildare recedes into the distance further and further, you're like, geez, that was a good chance in 98. Yeah.
Doesn't occupy your mind all the time, though.
Roman Empire style, yeah, once a day. Sure, yeah, yeah. You know? Matthew, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, sure. How are you?
Enda, what's going on?
Not much. Not much. Well, actually, there's a lot going on.
Justice done in the end. Like, Belgium thumping the United States overnight. Kind of the most predictable results so far in many ways. The entire world unified, even the United States team themselves. Balogun seemed a little bit like, oof. Look, I accepted the red card. Yeah. I also accepted that I was able to play. And then he was apologetic about it afterwards.
Apparently so, yeah.
Yeah, so we hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the most American thing of all time though, isn't it? You know, they lie, they complain, they say it's the battlefield is unfair. Then they change the rules to suit themselves and then they lose anyway.
You don't get me wrong, like, Balogun's obviously a good player and he's been playing very well at this tournament. And actually, when he did come out that he was going to be playing, I did think they might have a little bit too much for Belgium, who haven't been all that great. Seemed to have turned a bit of a corner. But he was being talked about as if this was like they were drafting in, you know,
Maradona.
Yeah, like just dropping him in to go and take on this team who are not that good at all.
I did see one of the one of the athletic writers say that, you know, player for player, USA are better than Belgium. I'm like, Tielemans in an anonymous midfield. I think Tielemans is the standout player in both teams.
Yeah, I would think so. It's just, I think America's midfield is not bad. Like Tyler Adams is a good player. Weston McKennie's okay, I suppose. Anthony Robinson's probably better than who was playing left back for Belgium last night. They're always weak at fullback. Even in their golden generation, they couldn't really pull a fullback together.
De Kuyper,
oh yeah. She's at Brighton. He's not a bad player, yeah. Yeah, but I wasn't totally surprised to wake up to be a 4-1, but I was happy to see it, that result. Good to see Lukaku getting a goal. Just criminally underrated, I think. Lukaku. He's had an amazing career. Scored so many goals.
He does seem unstoppable as a goal-scoring force.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be building a team around him.
No. You have him in the squad, though.
Has he ever scored a beautiful goal?
I'm sure you could find one, yeah.
Always
sure.
Seems to be...
Doesn't matter, though.
Deflected off some defender's arse or his own arse.
His goal last night was really good. Yeah. It was a really good finish and his weak foot.
Build up to it, though.
Available for 10 million, according to Yahoo Sports at the moment, so...
In mid-30s, is he?
Yeah, he was 33 at this stage, 34, is he?
So, Fenerbahce are interested.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Balogun's stats last night...
What did he say?
Maybe Besiktas.
Lukaku.
Let me just you talk amongst yourself.
He's.
I'll go through Balogun's stats from last night.
33. Same age.
He had expected goals is of 0.43. Chances created 0. Shots on target 1. Shots off target 2. So 33% shot accuracy. He had 21 touches, 8 in the opposition box, 1 pass into the final third, and contributed nothing defensively.
Now he's a striker, so.
Yeah. No. He got a 5.9 on FotMob's rating, so that's.
Trump trapped that he didn't know what a red card was yesterday. You're out of the game. It's like that. And the interesting thing we worded it was like, that seems like too much control. A lot of control.
Yeah.
There was kind of a hint of admiration about how much power you'd have with a red card. But obviously he was briefed about this guy. He had a decent record. He had 3 goals and 3 assists, Balogun, up to this game.
He was doing well, yeah.
Now I have to say, I woke up not knowing what result it was going to be. I could have easily seen America beat Belgium. I was surprised. I let out a... And it was 4-1.
Same. I didn't expect it to be that one-sided, yeah.
I didn't see it. They got a carbon copy first 2 goals, didn't they? Belgium. Same assist, same header, same goal score. Dream team style.
I have to say, this goes totally against all kind of moral compass, but I would have been interested to see how far Trump could have pushed the USA. What levers could he have pulled? Could he have pushed them so far that they went on and won it?
But Trump was kind of absent, wasn't he, during the group stage? I thought we'd be more present. Didn't hear an awful lot from Trump, so he intervened in this part.
After he got booed.
But he's going to lose, he'll lose interest immediately in this.
You see, part of the problem is that most of the games, barring Texas, are in blue states, so he just won't turn up. That's why I haven't seen him much.
I think also we have seen what hometown influence can do in a tournament, all the way back to Sweden in 1958. I'm not saying there's anything corrupt about that, but certainly South Korea seemed to get
crazy.
Plenty of so there are ways and means of doing it. Trump obviously doesn't have any of the subtlety that perhaps the South Koreans had at the time. You know, you see how crazy South Korea are about banning their manager from restaurants and blurring his face porn style out of news conferences. It's like they take their football seriously.
Yeah,
it's a real thing. So they obviously know better how to do this, and maybe America could learn something from South Korean soft power. Glad they didn't. It's better that he was unsubtle.
Yeah. Speaking of soft power, that is the end of Cristiano. So he says this afterwards, right? It is the end of the World Cup. He does refer to himself in the third person, no surprise there. Quote here, I've won 3 titles of Portugal. Before Cristiano, Portugal won nothing. The biggest title I won with the national team was?
Most caps, most goals.
The Euros.
Euro 2016.
He actually says it, that's okay.
For me, the Euros
that
has...
him, just... anyway.
For me, the Euros has the same value as a World Cup. And the thing about Ronaldo's international career, obviously compared to the boy, he has to deal with that now, never winning a World Cup. But that Euro 2016 final must be a sickener for him. Because he goes off the pitch after about 10 minutes. And he becomes the de facto manager. Maybe it's a great managerial achievement for him that they won that game. But who got the winner for Portugal that night against France, Euro 2016?
Eder.
Eder. Eder could walk by you right now. He should be the hero. But it's all about Ronaldo. Now, as of last night, or as for last night, do we think he was his usual self these days? Wasteful?
The only thing about the 2016, they wouldn't have won that tournament if Ronaldo wasn't playing.
Oh, I'm not saying that.
But like,
he only played for a few minutes in the final.
Yeah, no, I know that. I know that. Yeah, I appreciate that.
He deserves a medal, is what you're saying.
Totally. No, I'm saying for him, it must be a sickener that he didn't actually play much of the game itself.
Yeah.
Must be horrible.
It would be the same for anyone.
Yeah, but like Roy Keane talks about, Champions League finalists doesn't look at that medal with any great love. Not playing in the game itself. Now, Ronaldo played a few minutes of the game, went off. But it must hurt him. I imagine it does.
Yeah.
Although he won't think about it too much. So last night, if he flings himself at that Jan Neves flick-on, I wonder, does he get to it? That's the last, very last play of the game.
You haven't seen that back. I thought at the time it looked very close.
Yeah. But again, it was Ronaldo showing up. In his modern version,
he was dreadful, wasn't he? Throughout the game, like the thing that struck me was not even the stuff that was happening off the ball, and we can get debate all day whether what it contributes from a like a team wide perspective and how he impacts other players. But when he got the ball, he was genuinely awful and looked like a 41-year-old trying to do step overs. He was slow; his touch was off. He clearly can't go by anybody anymore. And like Roberto Martinez has thrown away this World Cup to keep Ronaldo on the pitch. Like, there's always this thing of, you know, if you want that one chance to fall to someone. But what says you stop doing that?
Well,
what says you not want it to fall to Ronaldo? Or what stage is it never going to fall to Ronaldo because he can't physically get there to be there in the first place for
those
chances.
There was a reasonable bit of analysis at halftime in the BBC where they were like, you're picking this guy, he's still able to head the ball, put the cross in. And at various stages, Bruno was on the right wing and looked up and went, not doing that. And then eventually the cross comes in and a chance gets created and it's not a great chance. But like, it didn't seem as if they had a plan for using him in the one way that they could use him, even though they picked him in the team. So it didn't make sense.
You read out Balogun's stats there from last night and about how, you know, non-influential he was. And I don't think the main takeaway from USA's loss last night is that Balogun didn't do a whole lot. And I don't think the main takeaway from Portugal's loss last night is that Ronaldo didn't do a lot. I think the main takeaway from Portugal's loss last night is the fact that on paper they've got the best midfield in the tournament, bar none. Barring maybe only the one they were up against. And the one they were up against didn't turn up to their full faculty. Didn't think Pedri was particularly good last night.
No.
Thought Rodri stepped up, was probably the best midfielder at the tournament. He's shown levels to everyone he's going up against. But Vitinha, João Neves probably played their better games than they have. Probably played better last
Vitinha
night than
off.
They have done. Yeah, still likes Vitinha off, and Vitinha was far better than João Neves was last night. Bruno Fernandes was terrible. I saw a lot of people saying Bruno Fernandes didn't get on any ball. Bruno Fernandes did get on a lot of ball at the very start of the game. Within the first 25 minutes, he got a lot of touches, and his touches were absolutely dreadful. They were running 5 yards away from him. He had opportunities there to play passes. Yes, granted, there were times where Vitinha and João Neves and the centre-halves, Diaz and Vega, picked up the ball, and Bruno Fernandes was between the midfield and was there for a line splitting pass, and they didn't play it. And I think that has been the biggest crime of it, really, in that the amount of talent that they do have in that team, players who are currently the best in the world. Everyone knows that Cristiano Ronaldo is not the best striker in the world right now, but Bruno Fernandes is supposed to be one of the best creative midfielders in the world. João Neves and Vitinha are supposed to be two of the best midfielders in the world. Nuno Mendes was very good last night.
Amazing.
Ruben Diaz is supposed to be one of the best centre-halves in the world. He was decent. But like, even your wingers, you're looking
at... Nuno Mendes was great.
He was great.
And
he was
when he went off, actually, at least, I don't know, it didn't make that much of a difference because Yamal was playing badly.
Yeah.
I look at the team and think, what would Unai Emery do with that? He'd play a box midfield with two tens and the two centre midfielders, and there'd be a wide player who can drift in and out. And if you have to have a striker, you at least have a very specific role for that striker to do. And if that has to be Ronaldo for an hour, you're like, yeah, you're going to run yourself into the channel, you're going to knock yourself out, and we're going to win the game when you're on the pitch. Yeah. It'll be 2-0 or 3-0. You're coming off then.
And by the way, I'm not trying to claim as though Ronaldo was brilliant or even good at all, really, in this tournament. He hasn't been. And I think another issue that I definitely would have is why Goncalo Ramos was not brought on at all. Mm. Not even for Ronaldo, because he was brought on against Croatia and the two of them were playing up front and they scored, and then he came off and he scored again. So that does baffle me a little bit. But I don't know, you can get into the details of the game with Richard Fitzpatrick, obviously, but I do think the Spain team are... not to move away from Portugal too quickly, but there's a slight bang of the early Enrique days off them, where they pass and pass and pass and pass.
Don't have a plan.
They just don't really. Not they don't have a plan. I just think in the Euros they had killers there with Williams and Yamal, who could really, you know, put a game to bed. Whereas Yamal just doesn't look totally fit, and I'm not sold on the rest of them.
But that's the Spain squad. If you look at it though, they play exactly like their personnel. They've got a load of technical players in the middle. I don't think they're like fantastic up front. They could have scored really early. Arrizabal has a 1-on-1. Yeah. He's onside for that 1-on-1.
He's
all the time in the world. That's 7 minutes gone. So he converts that. We're having a different conversation this morning. That's fine margin stuff. Well, Nuno Mendes hits the bar in the first half as well. It was a great first half, a great particularly start to the game. Second half was mad, like, it was just nothing happening. They were cancelling each other out. Back to the Ronaldo thing though. Mm. There's a moment there with 10 minutes to go, and they're on the counter-attack. The ball finds Ronaldo. You're looking at Ronaldo from... It is mad how much he's evolved as a player. You look at, like, Ronaldo from 20 years ago, and that itself is a hint of why he's evolved, because it's so long ago. He gets the ball on that right wing. You don't want any other player having it. He's going to take everyone on. Now he gets the ball. Do you know what he does with it? Do you remember this point?
Mm-hmm.
Turns back. Flakes it way back. It's not even a pass back.
Goes back to the defence.
Yeah.
And there's a few boos from the crowd, because he throws it way, way down. So that's a huge problem with the...
Hello, it's Owen Chahan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup It's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
As for the performance of his teammates, right, that's a very fair point. I do wonder, and this is kind of something that we'll never be able to prove it properly, how much Vitinha, Neves and Fernandes affected by Ronaldo up front and their own performance. So they get the ball, they're used to a bit of movement. Certainly the two PSG boys, they're used to a very fluid front three. Now, he still had two partners up front, Ronaldo. He still had Pedro Neto and he still had João Félix, who actually wasn't bad last night.
No.
He was pretty decent. He was. Worth hard.
Joe, that's the best I've seen Joe Felix play. Yeah.
So I wouldn't, I think you're right. I wouldn't excuse his teammates at all, and it's all Ronaldo's fault. But I do wonder how much of a psychological impact it has on them when they get possession and they're looking ahead, that they have a guy who's not going to move.
Mm. Well, just on that, talking it from like a holistic approach from Portugal, like the problem with the wingers is that João Neves and Neto were tracking back to double up on Spain's wingers to defend. That is one issue, so they're not getting forward as much. I'm just looking at Ronaldo's heat map. This is where I see the problem with the Portuguese midfield. And granted, I'm no expert, but if you take Vitinha or Neves or Fernandes, when they get the ball, what are they looking for? A centre forward who's making runs in between the lines. Ronaldo's heat map is empty in the space between the box right in the centre, where a centre forward naturally would be. His three highest areas of impact on the play. One is the 6-yard box where he touched it a couple of times. One is 20 yards back in the midfield. And the other one is actually in his own half. That's where your centre forward is playing.
Would you not say that one of the reasons for that would be the fact that Portugal are just sitting in a low block for pretty much all the game, and he's the striker, so he's the first one forward and he's sitting on the edge of his...
But why is he not in the centre if he's the striker?
Well, he's just moving across. Like, I mean, go get any striker. Go get any striker. I can guarantee you not every striker. The best strikers in the world aren't just standing in the middle of the pitch.
I'm not talking about standing in the middle. I'm talking about being anywhere in the middle. He's not anywhere in the middle. Like, there is no heat map for him in the middle where you would expect a centre forward to be. He's playing centre forward. Like, how can you, as if you're Bruno Fernandes or a midfielder, if your fullbacks or if your wingers are helping out your fullbacks and that's part of your game plan, you need an outball. The outball did not exist last night.
Your outball doesn't always have to be your striker.
But who's it going to be if your wingers are doubling up on the fullback?
Well, then you don't get your wingers to double up on with the fullback.
If that's part of your game plan,
but
why
then you
is your
change
striker?
Your game plan. You change your game
so
plan.
You change your game plan for a 41-year-old.
You change your game plan. You change
anyway.
Your game plan to suit the players that you have on the pitch.
So
that's what football is about. You play
so you
with what you have.
It's a game plan problem.
Yes,
with Ronaldo.
Absolutely.
You don't think it's a Ronaldo issue?
I'm not saying it's not totally a Ronaldo issue, but there's merit in having him on the pitch. There absolutely
What's
is
the merit of having him on the
merit
pitch?
Of having him on the pitch is that he's Cristiano Ronaldo.
He's 41-year-old Cristiano Ronaldo.
He's Cristiano Ronaldo.
If he's 45 or 46, is it the same thing?
No, it's not
the same.
You
still need to change your game plan?
Like, you do need to... If you're going to make the decision that you're going to play him, which is the decision that they made, then they have to change the game plan to suit the people that they have on the pitch. When Nuno Mendes goes off the pitch, they change their game plan because they've got a right-footed player playing at left-back. There's no problem in changing them. What's the issue with them going and changing the fact that they've got Ronaldo up front and they have to suit?
How do you play into Ronaldo's strengths?
You get people around him.
How do you do that if you have to have your wingers coming back on?
You don't have to have your wingers doubling up on them. You're just saying that's what they chose to do. They don't have to do that.
But then you open yourself up to Lamine Yamal tearing your fullback apart.
You can do it with Yamal. You don't have to do it on the other side. Like I don't know.
He was also a half fit Yamal. Like
I just think it's and this is not I think there's people take an awful lot of joy in seeing Ronaldo like this.
I'm not taking any joy. I'm just like
no, picking, yeah, you definitely
I'm,
are.
I'm,
like, you definitely
I'm picking
are.
Apart like why yeah.
and
why
I can,
we need
I can
to
understand
bow
why
down
people,
to a 41-year-old striker
like
and say yeah. he needs to be on the pitch. He needs to be. He might get a goal.
Yeah.
You didn't get any goals last night.
He didn't get any goals last night. Yeah, that's true.
He wasn't moving.
Yeah, so he must have been terrible. Like all the other players who've often played quite well and not scored goals. That's grand. They played against...
Do you think Ronaldo played well last night?
No, I don't think Ronaldo played well last night. I said that about 10 minutes ago.
That's the debate.
Yeah, that's not the debate. That's not the debate we're having here at all about whether Ronaldo played well last night. It's about whether Portugal can be a functional team with Ronaldo up front. That's the debate we're having.
Are they a functional team?
They're
with
not
Ronaldo?
Because of the way that they're playing. There is a world in which they can be a functional team. They didn't set up to be functional and be good last night and go and win that game. They set up not to lose, which is something that Roberto Martinez has done with Portugal in all the major tournaments that they played in. They did it against France and they went on penalties in the last year. He did it with Belgium as well. How many narrow games did they go and lose because they set out not to win the game? They set out to stay in the game for as long as possible. And that's what they did last night, and they got caught late in the game. They could have easily gone the other way, but they didn't set up to go and get the best out of the players that they have. Some of the best players in the world.
It's like he doesn't understand that he has all those good quality midfielders.
Like, maybe the next manager will now understand that it's a new era. It's a great time to come in.
You're missing the best of Bernardo Silva as well. Like, yeah.
Look at the players they bring on.
What a dick he was when he came on and how bad he was.
It's a good player. Well, in fairness, Spain bring on Fabian Ruiz. But the thing about Ronaldo, like all this analysis, right? If it wasn't Ronaldo, right? If this is just a no-mark striker playing exactly like that, right? He obviously would have been hooked way before because he's fairly ineffective.
Yeah, I'm not disputing.
But the problem is, when we're analysing a player, because you give these stats and the heat map stuff in there, and it's actually all very valid. The problem is, it is overall fairly invalid as an argument because we are talking about this exceptional person. Because they're never going to take him off in a situation like that.
The only thing about that is, right, which is slightly strange, is that they did take him off against Croatia with the game at 1-1. They did do that. And I thought at the time, I still think this, the only reason he did that is because they lost complete control of the game because they were 1-0 down and he threw on a load of subs and Ramos was on the pitch alongside Ronaldo. And the game was 1-1, but they had no one in midfield.
I think Martinez couldn't avoid his own coaching history. Like, we're going to lose this game if I don't take him off. Whereas this game was in the balance, very much in the balance last night. There was no real superior team in that match. Like, I thought that was going to extra time all day long at the end of it.
Yeah, I was delighted.
Oh my God, never happier.
It's funny that we all had the same emotion of relief. Like, thank God someone finished this game. And it was a great finish.
It was a terrible game.
But I don't like, look, it was exactly what I expected from Ronaldo. It was no better or no worse. It was exactly what I expected him to do. Well, and he nearly scored at the end if he threw himself at the ball. Maybe he wasn't going to get to it anyway.
I do buy that, though, if you're picking him, play to his strength and put some balls in the box, we can actually at least try ahead.
Yeah, totally. And they look like an average enough midfield, and obviously you're talking about three extraordinary players.
They're so safe. Like, so safe. Whatever about any option that Ronaldo's not giving you or whatever, every opportunity they got, they turn around.
Yeah.
And they've been doing that all tournament. The entire tournament they've been doing it. They've been doing it ever since the midfield two became João Neves and Vitinha, which is just strange. I don't understand it.
Those three boys are superstars, right? Vitinha, Neves and Fernandes in world football. But they've never shared a pitch with a player of this aura. And I'm not saying that as a compliment or negativity. It's just the guy has stature beyond anything they've ever able to comprehend.
Bruno had a period with United.
He did, and it wasn't the great Bruno Fernandes, right?
I do think there's some merit in Fernandes and Ronaldo not being able to play together. I think there is something in that, for sure.
I do think it affects all of their decision making. There's an extra option every time they get the ball about, I feel like I have to pass to this guy, but this guy isn't in a great position. And it looks like they're playing that way. No, of course they're going to deny that all the time. No, we play, it's a team game and all that. But if you look when the ball goes into the final third, there's always a body language of where is he?
Yeah.
Where is he?
Now, there is with Argentina as well. Like, you often see there's a better pass on.
The thing about Argentina is, where does Messi play compared to Ronaldo? So Messi's way deeper. So it's much more palatable given the ball there.
And when Messi gets the ball, he's really capable of creating.
That's the thing about Ronaldo.
Or even still, he still has that pace, still has that sharpness. Ronaldo just does not have any of that.
The brain and technique. But Ronaldo, like, this is not a sensationalised line I'm trying to say. He's not a great footballer in the sense of, like, he's not going to pick passes for you. He's not going to tread the needles and all that. He's not going to be like 1-2 really quick passing. Ronaldo has strengths that no one else has ever had. But I actually don't think that's one of his things. Whereas it suits Messi fine.
There was never the idea that Ronaldo might drop into midfield and become a creator and can even drop even further and do that sort of Pirlo, Modric role. There was never that thing. Whereas Messi could genuinely probably play another 5-6 years in different positions and still
and
be fine.
But last night, look, I wasn't thinking they got to take Ronaldo off at the end of the game because it was so tight.
Isn't there a big debate about where the World Cup final is going to be in 4 years' time? Is there a possibility it might be at the new camp?
I think Morocco are fighting hard for that.
So the three hosts are out now.
Do we want to hear from Portugal manager Roberto Martinez on
Asperla?
On the man Asperla, he took, I think it's like 17 minutes of Portuguese questions, then the last 2 minutes are on Ronaldo, and basically just asked, why did you keep him on?
Today that's an easy way to analyze. When you are a team that you need a goal, you cannot take Cristiano off, at least in the 90 minutes, because physically he's totally, totally capable with what he's done over the season to be able to be there. It's a presence, open space, a dead ball situation, anything in the box. We need his experience, so it would make no sense. Probably going into extra time, it would have been the moment to use the energy of Gonzalo Ramos. Today we were stopping totally what Spain tries to do with the influence of Pedri, the influence of Olmo, the influence of Rodri, the influence of Lamine Yamal, Cucurella arriving in the last step. We consider a goal that is not typically in the patterns of Spain, so today we had to keep the structure, and it wasn't a case to take your centre forward to top goal scorer off the game in the 90 minutes. Is using the players, is using the information that we have. Rafael Leao was our best player against Croatia. Last time he played 90 minutes was in the 1st of March, and during the whole season never played two games in 4 days. So you have to protect your players, you have to use your players, and I think that's what we do very, very well. But that's not to stop criticism from the outside, that's just to give the best chance to our players. Today, I think you said a word about disappointing. I'm not disappointed. No, I'm sad. I'm sad because we lost. We wanted to get to the final. I really felt that we could get 8 games in this tournament, but I'm extremely proud. We played one of the favorite teams eye to eye, and we made them been very comfortable. You have to score goals. If you don't score goals, you're always open. But I'm extremely proud of the work of the players and the journey that we had to be able to play like this. When I arrived in the Euros, I said it, we played against France and the first half we couldn't have the mentality to be able to play eye to eye. It was in the second half and we were unlucky to lose on the penalties. Then we got the rewards playing against Germany away from home, playing against Spain and winning the Nations League. So it's been a journey, and today it's just immense pride to see how we played, the personality, the focus. The result didn't go our way, as it happens in this stage of this tournament, because you're playing against teams that they got the best players in their country, and they got the, in this case, attack of favourites in the tournament.
What type of a job does Martinez
get? I was actually thinking Spain job. That's the one he wants, right?
De La Fuente's gone nowhere, isn't he? Well,
he wouldn't be leaving now.
Don't give him another golden generation.
But that's what does he get? Like, he must be a dream to work with. There must be a lot to be said for that.
Very, very polished, very experienced.
I know that when he was giving his tactical talks and the hydration breaks, you know, Ronaldo was really trying to be polite about it. He was really nodding along. At one point, he was like, I'm going to go. He said, no, it's one more thing. You can't help but see the dynamic there right in front of you, is that Martinez has to manage like two different teams almost, the Portugal team and the team of Ronaldo in his head.
Yeah.
But it's a tough job, only a few people can do it.
I don't think he did well at it.
No. I wonder what he will rock up next. So Ronaldo will be what age in the next World Cup?
45.
So can you envision a world where he retires from football before the next World Cup, but actually makes a return for the World Cup?
As in, but I mean, that's exactly what he's just done, right?
From football?
Basically. He's gone to Saudi Arabia.
Well, then you'd argue he's only been an international player for a few years. He's been there for 3 or 4 years, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia.
I would say he's given up. Yeah. It seems to be grand. He seems to be able to go out there.
My point is, I wouldn't say this is the definitive end.
Mm. Now that they've let him into America, right, and all that noise has disappeared, would you be surprised if he wanted to try and conquer the States and have some more versus Messi?
I don't know if he'll share it with Lionel.
What kind of coach do you think Ronaldo would make?
Selfish one. I don't know. I mean,
there aren't that many billionaire coaches, first off. So why would he bother?
Like your man, the tennis.
Yeah, it's good. Good segue there for a second. Anyway, the Ronaldo managerial reign, is that Euro 2016 final? That went well.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
When he went,
I don't think he'd have the patience for it. I think it would be like Henri, you know. Henri did all right, I suppose, with the Olympics and the French team. He's maybe got a little bit more humility than Ronaldo does, but...
Do you think Henri could end up managing France?
Maybe, like maybe.
Post Zidane. Zidane does 4 years.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's one of them where like he'll be just get frustrated by the fact that a lot of these players he's managing won't be able to do what he was able to do. I think Zidane's a little bit different in the sense that you could say the same thing.
Yeah.
But he just maybe has a little bit more... Ronaldo's a very emotional bloke, I think, as well. I'm not sure that would work too well.
Yeah, like when he cries last night in the picture, like I totally see that coming. He's going to cry all the time.
There is that element of like... he is a self-made superstar, and that he like he took every bit of talent that he had and transformed it into being on par to the Messi for a long time in terms of goal scoring, recreated himself as a striker from a winger, recreated himself as a winger a couple of times, you know, built this physique that was capable of dominating for so long. Like maybe he is able to translate that onto a coaching pitch and he's able to say, look, to the, some of these really good players, I can show you how to be world class if you're disciplined.
I think I think the way in which Ronaldo got himself to very top throughout his career, like with his ego and his self-centered nature, was I think something you could see a mile away that eventually it was going to be to his detriment to some degree before he did pack it in.
Late in the day.
Yeah, I think that's yeah. I think that's I think that's par for the course with him. I'm not surprised to see that it's kind of trended this way, but
I don't know what he's going to do, Ronaldo, because he transcends the game in terms of the name and all that, but I don't know if he's a David Beckham type where he'll transfer seamlessly into celebrity social circles. And I think he's too big for management, because that's a quite at times selfless job.
Yeah, look, Maradona ended up managing Argentina at the World Cup.
Yeah,
I don't think anybody would have predicted that.
There's that sort of thing I could definitely see where he, you know, takes Portugal for a tournament or something. You know, that kind of way. I could
see
that.
They gave Maradona that job just to save him, like just to give him something to do.
Well, you know, I think
I shouldn't laugh.
I think that he could end up as the president of FIFA.
Yeah, yeah.
Jobs, president of the Portuguese FA, owner of a club in Portugal. You know, the face of a multi-club franchise. All that, like anything is on the owner of an American club, you know. Do the same deal that Beckham did. Go and play 3 years in the MLS in a city that, I don't know, in any of those cities. And then you get an ownership of the next franchise that comes on stream. And like football in the United States seems to be on the up and up. It seems to be an unstoppable juggernaut now after the numbers that they were talking about. And maybe the 4-1 defeat last night slows that down a bit, but probably not too much.
Mm. We are seeing a rise in the amount of ex-players from our era, from my era, let's say, going into ownership. The likes of Como springs to mind. Ronaldo's probably rich enough to do that by himself. So maybe he buys another club, look at Como.
Yeah, he's also rich enough connection to know loads of other billionaires who would, you know, allow them to do...
This is his retirement discussion, though, isn't it? The fact, though, because that's his last world stage game.
I think he'll play at the Euros. I think he'll finally accept the throw me on for 10 minutes.
Like, what? Would that be the worst thing?
I wish he did that 4 years ago.
Imagine.
You know?
He just need to go away and rebrand that as something really positive.
The closer. And if he does that, and a series of,
there'll be like an ad campaign as being the new closer, and then he'll adapt to it. But it would have to be something in it for Ronaldo. He's not doing a job for the team for 10 minutes. It has to be his thing.
I see Michael Flatley made a movie. Remember that movie he made? I see a Ronaldo in a movie.
I don't know if he did a movie thing. I'm not sure about it.
Well, we move on.
Has a player ever changed their game as much in a career as Ronaldo?
No.
He's an unrecognisable player now to what he was when he started. I'm not talking about legs. This guy used to infuriate Ruud van Nistelrooy and the rest of his teammates because he wouldn't cross the ball. And now the only thing he does when he gets the ball is shoot.
Yeah.
I've never seen Gareth Bale. Maybe was a left back at Southampton, set piece specialist, ended up as a forward.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, but that's one transition. You know,
I've never seen anyone change like Ronaldo's changed.
It just to become like the best header of a ball in the world for like
The guy who he used to supply for the first half of his career is who he became in the second half of his career.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pirlo was a just creative midfielder and then dropped back into
who?
Pirlo. It's not quite as dramatic as Ronaldo's change, though.
Yeah.
Speaking of dramatic, Arthur Ferry dramatically beat Grigor Dimitrov at Wimbledon yesterday. Why does that matter? Well, he's the first qualifier from Britain to reach the quarterfinals of Wimbledon. So you think this is like a rags-to-riches story? This is like, oh, it's incredible. Really exciting. So he won 7-6 in that final set yesterday. This guy comes from Welt, right? He's from down the road, Wimbledon. His dad owned Lorient, the French football club. So he comes from wealth of £275 million. And he beat Grigor Dimitrov yesterday. At 23 years of age, this guy, Arthur Ferry. He's British and his parents are French. Hell of an achievement. No one's ever done that from Britain, what he's just achieved yesterday. Into the last eight now. Of a pretty wide open Wimbledon, to be fair. Comes from unbelievable wealth, which in itself, I would argue, is an achievement. Because where was the motivation?
Yeah, I'd be with you on that. Very much so.
Where was the motivation? This guy studied in America, took his life seriously, didn't go full-time tennis until quite recently. But here he is, keeping British hopes alive because it's been a very bad Wimbledon for the Brits. Step forward as multimillionaire to save them.
It was a good lesson in not turning things off too early for me. Because I woke up this morning and I thought you were saying he did well to get to round four. Because I turned this off and Dimitrov went 3-1 up in sets. And I was like, this game's over now. Going into the fourth set, I was like, this game's over now. I'll make my dinner, sit down, relax a little bit before the World Cup.
We had this whole conversation pre-show and then it was like, what do you mean last eight? And here we are.
Listen. Look, part of the thing with tennis, though, is that funding is pretty much the separator a lot of the time between somebody who's good enough to make it on the tour and somebody who doesn't make it on the tour because they don't have enough money to keep themselves going. So it's not the fairy tale that you would hope for from a wild card, but it's still pretty impressive.
It's still a good story, no matter what he's done.
He was very poor for a good chunk of the game as well. Like,
yeah, he's come back to Dimitrov, former semi-finalist, former world number three. Not a bad scalp at all. It felt to me that Henry Shefflin and Kilkenny was inevitable. But has he done enough to earn this spot? Sure. The new Kilkenny manager, for people who missed it.
I think you're correct. It was inevitable. Has he done enough? Like, he's the greatest player they ever had from the winningest county of all time. He won a Club All-Ireland with his club. I think his time at Galway wasn't particularly impressive. And so that's the question mark. Is he good enough to do it? It's different. Obviously, everybody in Kilkenny is going to say, yeah, right? But we've been talking about Kilkenny's troubles with Tommy all year. And it's this identity crisis they have.
Yeah.
There was some of that in what Galway were trying to do. And what Micheál Donoghue did was looked at last year, totally changed the team around, totally changed the style of play, and now they're in an All-Ireland final. So can Henry Shefflin do that? He certainly has the weight and the reputation to be able to say, no, we're not doing what we used to do. It's not going to get us to where we need to get to. So we're going to do something totally different. Whatever that is, if he has the plan, right, great. If he doesn't have the plan, then, you know, and if he doesn't have the players, then there's nothing you can do. So it's a fair play to him for taking it because it's not an easy moment.
That'd be my takeaway with it as well, yeah. There would probably be a more opportune moment in a couple of years for him to come in and take it, you know. And I suppose you can't be... you have to take some things when they come to your doorstep, you know. They might only come around once, but I do think that this is something that would have always been there for him, regardless. I'd be surprised if, with the nature of how the GAA is now, if they stumbled upon an era like Brian Cody again, where he's there for, you know, the guts of whatever, 3 decades.
Yeah.
So I do think it would have been there from again at some other point, but it is a massive job. And as always is the case, I think that the only measure of success in Kilkenny is winning in All-Ireland. And they're a bit away from that at the minute. Maybe in his first year, that's not going to be what success is deemed as considering. They'll have to regain their Leinster title, which they obviously relinquished this year. So if they go and win that back, find themselves in an All-Ireland semi-final, that is with the structure at the minute. You're never a million miles away from winning All-Ireland on paper, because all you have to do is is go and win your province and you're back in a final.
Yeah, and if you, sorry, you win your province,
semi-final regard, sorry.
If you win your province, you're regularly up against a side who has had the shit battered out of them and has battered the shit out of their opponents.
Yeah. You can really benefit from the structure, and it is a great time to take over, because this is the nadir of modern Kilkenny hurling, as in 21st century, where we are now.
You know that it can't get worse. It can.
Possibly, but I would back him to New Shetland bounce them into an Leinster final.
And you expect that fewer people will go travelling this year. Everybody will make themselves available.
I think as soon as he succeeded in his first stint with Ballyhale, it did feel like this day would come sooner rather than later. I think they just needed one example of him being a good manager, just one, and it would be enough for him to take over, considering what he did as a player. And he did. I mean, the Galway stint was fine, wasn't it?
It was bad.
I thought it was fine, but it was fine to average.
I think that everybody's reluctant to criticise because he's such a legend. But being truthful, it was bad. They didn't play well. They underachieved. They underperformed. There was no discernible style or pattern of play. And like that happens, right? Sometimes there's a lack of cultural fit. And they had a big opportunity because Kilkenny were on the wane. Well, you know?
For Kilkenny's sake, you better hope that he uses that inter-county experience to get all his mistakes out of the way, which is tough on Galway.
But, like, well, it's over now.
But he has to do it. But then he goes back to where he started with Ballyhale, so I wonder how much of an improved manager he is. The improvement would stem from an unsuccessful spell, because he's going back to do what he already did at Ballyhale.
There's probably also the argument that maybe the Galway job is his first experience at inter-county management, and he'll take what he learned from that onto Kilkenny.
All of American sport is littered with coaches who have a flame out and then come back and have learned the lessons, and he's obviously an incredibly smart fella, so I've no doubt that he will have learned. And I just also know that Tommy talks about the bloodlines of his grandfather was really fast. Like, they know all this stuff about every team in Kilkenny because they've played, especially him who had like 20 years of being the best player in the county. He's played against everybody and their dad and their dad's dad. And so I think all that stuff matters, that like he'll just have better information and a better sense of what they're trying to do. It's just whether or not the backroom team is going to be at the level that it needs to be to make sure that. So Cork obviously have gone for the high profile former player, absolute legend, who had a very specific kind of attitude to the game. And that's not enough. You need a backroom team. There's great stuff in the papers today, in the Examiner and elsewhere, about Cork's problems. And Kilkenny need to look at that and go, we could be in the middle of a famine as long as Cork's, unless we arrest the slide. And how are we going to do it? We're going to have to do whatever it was that Limerick did. We're going to have to look at Galway and go, how did they change from last year being terrible to this year being really good?
Yeah, well, Tommy Walsh talked about that in style of play thing in Kilkenny, isn't it? To modernise how they play.
Yeah.
Now, you can't, I wouldn't lay that on the floor of Henry Shefflin fixing it, especially if your biggest critique of him at Galway was that there was no discernible style of play. So now you're relying on the star power of Henry Shefflin to improve you.
What's a success for Shefflin here? Like, let's say over the next 5 years, they win a Leinster title.
Yeah.
Get to two All-Ireland finals and win one of them.
Yeah,
is that a success?
I think if you're saying 5 years, it has to culminate in an All-Ireland victory.
What if they win a couple of Leinster titles and don't win any All-Ireland titles?
I guess because the season is so condensed, if you win Leinster, we're straight into the semi-finals. It depends how you get beaten.
No.
That's not a success?
No. Derek Ling would have been considered a success then.
What if you know? What if I'm just throwing out scenarios here, by
between
the way.
Them being in an All-Ireland final against Cork, and who knows? Did Cork flake out against Kilkenny?
Is there arguments behind, let's say, a Kieran McGinney at Armagh, where they didn't have the success, they weren't getting there. You could see that eventually they're going to get here under Geezer if they stick by him. What if it's a bit like that?
They were coming from much lower ebb, though, the McGinney example,
And I don't think it was inevitable that they were going to get there. Like,
you kind of felt like it was going to get
there. I don't know. It was like, should Galway not have beaten them? I was away for that. I was watching it, boxing at the Olympics. So yeah, like,
could have gone the other way, definitely.
You know. But I don't think you can compare Armagh and where they are in the Roll of Honour with where Kilkenny are. So success is clearly different. Mm-hmm. It's like you get to Man United and you're like, oh, we qualified for the Champions League every year. Oh, congratulations, well done. Whatever. It's a trophy. It's not. So no, I don't think so.
Yeah, that's that's determined on Kilkenny's history that the only success will be an All-Ireland win. But you actually have to deal with the players in front of you, and the problem they have is what's coming through.
Totally. Well,
that, which is a worry for them.
But the problem they have what's coming through is I think we don't know, right? Because you could have two amazing players on a team that gets beaten in semi-finals and finals of Leinster or All-Irelands, and those two players end up having 10-year senior careers. This whole, like, all of GAA history is littered with teams who won 321s and then never won something. You know, that's not really how it works. There could be loads of very good players coming through, but they just didn't come through in the same age group.
If this is a success, okay, and he racks up a few Leinster titles and he wins an All-Ireland or two in the next 5 years, how do you think it happens under Shefflin? Why does it work?
Obviously, he's galvanised the whole county by arriving in first.
Being him.
But secondly, they have some strategic advantage that we have yet to see.
Yeah, that's interesting.
There's no way he's going to do it through sheer force of personality, because you can't do that anymore.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to commit to a style of play immediately from the off, and that be the right one.
Well, Micheál Donoghue had a year last year where things didn't go well, and then ripped up the playbook. So I'd say there's a window where he has a honeymoon period where you get to see exactly what everybody is capable of.
Yeah.
But
true enough,
maybe eventually they need to say, this is who we are now.
Yeah.
At some point.
The Micheál Donoghue thing as well, I think he's dead as well. Like, he brought in so many of those, like, when you say young lads, they're young lads who aren't ready. And then eventually, very quickly become ready.
Yeah.
Like, there might be a bit of that. But there's probably a bit of untapped talent in the Kilkenny panel as well.
I'm sure there is.
A bit of hangover from the great teams.
I wonder, was his approach with Galway inherently what he learned under Brian Cody? Which was, go out and play.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, there was way more to it under Brian Cody than we'll ever be privy to. But you hear Tommy Walsh and the rest of his teammates, and we'll speak with Paul Murphy soon enough about it, is, you know, what went on. And a lot of the time, Brian Cody, it sounded very, very simple what Cody had Kilkenny do. And I wonder, did Shefflin take that to Galway and think, well, that would be enough, because that's all I know under Brian Cody?
I don't know.
So Kilkenny, the idea of Kilkenny developing a style of play, I wonder, is that even that concept quite alien to them?
Mm.
Well, the difficulty is, right, that Kilkenny team under Cody had several of the best players in their position ever to play the game, which Galway didn't, which this Kilkenny team don't. So you need something different.
How would we expect Shefflin to have developed anything beyond that approach under Cody? Because I thought he knew.
I don't know. I think he probably thinks about the game a lot, you know. They're all PhDs in this thing. From school up.
The question, it still remains, you know, if it's going to be success, how is he going to do it? I'd be fascinated by it. I will speak with Paul Murphy about that.
One final story.
Go for it.
Before we finish up, it kind of gets lost in amongst all the rest of stuff, but a very important story to cover nonetheless. Former swimming coach George Gibney was convicted of sexually abusing four young swimmers. His court case has been ongoing. The jury yesterday found him guilty of four counts. He was originally charged with 79 counts. They returned not guilty verdicts in respect to 33 of them. So that's quite a big story that probably got lost in amongst the World Cup and other ongoing things, but important to mark these stories when they happen.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, horrific, absolutely horrific story. And this wouldn't have happened without the Where's George Gibney podcast, where new evidence came to light and the DPP said, right, let's go for it this time. And then the extradition happened. And so he's going to finish out his life in prison, hopefully.
Yep. for sure. Just one last bit here before we move on. The last two round of 16 games are today in the World Cup. They went early, actually, for an Irish audience. 5 p.m. and 9 p.m. the games today. Argentina against Egypt, Messi against Salah and all that, 5 o'clock. Switzerland against Colombia is the final last 16, and that's at 9 p.m. And then we have a day off. The first day off of the World Cup is tomorrow. Quarterfinal starting Thursday.
Yeah.
Day off. What?
Mm-hmm. Ridiculous.
Which day is off?
Tomorrow.
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 Wednesday, tomorrow. And then we start the quarterfinals on Thursday, 9 p.m. France, Morocco.
The times are excellent, apart from that one we think.
Well, we got 9 p.m., 8 p.m., 10 p.m.
Argentina.
No, the last one's 2 a.m.
Yeah,
Argentina, Colombia.
That was the one.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it works out that way, which it probably won't.
Probably won't indeed.